to give some basic instructions. Most of you have already done a retreat, so you know the instructions. But I'm still going to give them to you anyway. For everybody that has practiced with me before, and you've gotten into the Arupa Jhanas, now what I want you to do is start by doing the six directions with loving kindness. Your mind will jump up as it needs to the different levels of meditation. And you'll get into equanimity and neither perception nor non-perception fairly quickly. But still start out with six directions of loving kindness and let your mind go from there. It knows what it's doing. So, for people that have not come and done a retreat, I want you to start by sending loving and kind thoughts to yourself. Remember a time when you were happy, and when that happy feeling arises, it's kind of a warm, glowing feeling in the center of your chest. So as soon as that feeling arises, then you make a wish for your own happiness. Now, this is very important. You have to feel the wish that you're making. Okay, you feel, you wish yourself happiness. What does it feel like to be happy? You wish yourself joy. What does it feel like to have joy? You wish yourself peace and calm. What does it feel like to be peaceful and calm? Bring that feeling, put it in the center of your chest and radiate that feeling. Now, every morning, before you start doing any meditation, you're going to be taking the six, the eight precepts and the three refuges. These are exceptionally important to keep. You're doing it as a reminder to keep these precepts without breaking them. If you break one of the precepts, it's going to affect your meditation in a negative way. And you have a lot of restlessness, so it's very important to keep the precepts without breaking them. If you do happen to break one of the precepts, forgive yourself for making a mistake. Take the precepts again with the determination that you're not going to break it again. Now, a simple thing. In Burma, there was a Korean monk that came, and he ordained as a Theravada monk. And the Theravada monks eat during the noonday meal, but not in the evening. The Mahayana monks, they eat in the evening. Now, when this monk first came to the center, he was able to sit for 3 to 4 hours without any problem at all. Then he became a Theravada monk, and he started just breaking one little tiny rule. He was eating a meal in the evening. And that caused guilt to arise in his mind because he knew he shouldn't do it. By the end of the 3-month retreat, he could not sit more than 15 minutes because of that guilty feeling of knowing that you broke a precept. So it's real important to keep the precepts and pay attention to them. Okay, after about 10 minutes of sending loving and kind thoughts to yourself, then you start by sending loving and kind thoughts to a spiritual friend. A spiritual friend is somebody of the same sex, and they are alive, not a member of your family. You do the family members later. Stay with the same spiritual friend all the time. Your mind is going to wander, and that's okay. Wandering mind occurs because in the past you've broken one of the precepts. Okay? That's why wandering mind and restless mind occur. And that's okay for it to be there. It has to be okay because that's the truth. So it's real important for you to understand that anytime you try to resist the truth, anytime you try to push the truth away or make it be the way you want it to be, that is the cause of suffering. And that will keep coming back at you until you 6R enough to let it go. Now, the 6 R's, you recognize when your mind is distracted. You release the distraction. You release the distraction by not keeping your attention on it. You relax the tightness caused by that distraction, the tightness in your head, in your mind. Now, your mind is made up of two different lobes like this. And there's a bag around each lobe called the meninges. Every time you have a thought, every time there's a feeling, every time there's a sensation, your brain expands a little bit and it causes tension and tightness in your mind. So when you relax, you're letting go of that tension and tightness. The tension and tightness is craving. It's the I like it, I don't like it mind. If it's a pleasant feeling that comes up, your mind says, I like that. If it's a painful feeling that comes up, I don't like it. Now that's the nature of craving. Nature of craving is to occur very quickly and keep coming up. It's not particularly strong. You can let go of the craving fairly easily. But it keeps coming back. So you have to be able to notice that tightness and relax into it. Don't make a big deal out of it. If you make a big deal out of it, you're focusing too much on it. And that makes it come back more and more and more. The next part of the 6 R's is to bring up something wholesome. Which is? Smile. Keep your mind light. Don't get involved with nonsense stuff. Opinions, ideas, likes or dislikes. If you make a big deal of it, it's going to keep coming back. It's going to keep causing you suffering. It's just nonsense stuff. And I mean that literally. Nonsense. It's just your mind grabbing onto something and saying, this is the way it's supposed to be. I don't like it if it's not this way. Well, that's nonsense. Because you're fighting with the truth. Why fight with the truth? It only causes you suffering. Well, it doesn't match the way I think things are supposed to be. So? That's your opinion. That doesn't have anything to do whether it's true or not. It's just your opinion. So smile, keep your mind light, and bring that smiling, light mind back to your object of meditation, your spiritual friend. So stay with your spiritual friend as long as you can without forcing it to stay there. Don't use too much energy. Don't try to control it and make it stay there. Let mind do what it's going to do. Your job is just to be mindful. And what does that mean? Oh, there's so many different definitions of mindfulness. It's unbelievable. That's turned into a pet word. But the definition of mindfulness I'm going to give you works 100% of the time. Mindfulness is remembering to observe how mind's attention moves from one thing to another. How does it move? Not why does it move? That's what most people interested in mindfulness, they're into their why, and that's psychology. We don't care about psychology with this. We care about the Dhamma, the truth. How does this process work? When you start recognizing how it works, you start seeing that it is part of a process that is impersonal. It's not me, it's not mine, it's not my ideas. It's observing how the process arises, how it passes away. So, using the six R's will take you all the way to final Nibbana. Takes you all the way. Nibbana means a state of no fire, no heat. One of the expressions that has come back from the 60s is, isn't that cool? And that's what you want your mind to be, cool. You want your observation to be cool. Seeing it as impersonal. Not taking things personally. Anything you take personally, that's hot. Because the fire of craving is there. So, staying with your spiritual friend in a calm, non-demanding way and using the six R's to come back to your spiritual friend is very important. Now, when I say smile, I want you to use the six R's and smile. I don't care what you're doing. I don't care if you're taking a shower. I don't care if you're eating. I had somebody that was eating their meal and attained Nibbana while they were eating. Keep your mind light. Make this into a game. The biggest problem that people have, especially if they've done other kinds of meditation, is they're told by their teachers, you gotta try harder. Well, no you don't. You have to try less hard. Because when you try harder, you're trying to control. And this isn't about control. It's about letting go of control. So you can see things without being attached to them. Now there's a lot of people in Asia, this trip that I just got through making, that they've been doing a lot of different kinds of meditation. And I found out that almost all of them were suffering. They weren't happy. Now, why are you doing a meditation if it doesn't help you to be happy? If it doesn't give you relief? What's the point of the meditation? So what I had them doing was I had them doing forgiveness meditation because they were holding on to a lot of past actions where they did something that they felt guilty about. And they have to let it go. Sometimes it was anger, sometimes it was sadness, sometimes it was anxiety. Doesn't matter what it is. The content of those thoughts and feelings is not important. The letting go of them is important. Now, there was a man that was doing I was teaching him how to do a forgiveness meditation he was from Russia. And he wrote back and he said, in Russian, we don't have a word for forgiveness. So I said, well, come up with a word that makes sense. And then next day he wrote back and he said, we have a word for acceptance. And I said, that's perfect. That's what forgiveness is learning how to accept past mistakes without beating yourself up. And he did quite well in his retreat because of that. So I just got through reading a book by Lee Brazington, and he wanted to come up with a word, an American word that really meant dukkha. And he thought about it for a long time, and you know what word he came up with? Bummer. And it works. Oh, that's suffering. Bummer. But what happens in your mind when there's a bummer? Tight like a rock. It's not supposed to be like that. I don't like that. I don't want it to be that way. There's a lot of judging and condemning that we do that is very subtle. And we don't see that tightness that comes up. And we start identifying with those thoughts and those feelings and taking them personally. Your job is to improve your mindfulness so you can let go of all of that I stuff. I want it to be the way I want it to be. Who wants it that way? Me. I want it that way. Who's causing themselves suffering? Me. I'm doing it to myself. You can't blame somebody out there for your opinions and your ideas if they don't match. You have to learn to have true equanimity. Equanimity is a real important part of this practice. Having balance. Developing disenchantment, which is a very finer degree of equanimity. Now, when people come and they talk to me about their experience, and I think, they probably have just experienced Nibbana. One of the questions I ask is, when you see food, does your mind get excited? When you see your favorite food, does your mind get excited? No. No excitement at all. You probably have that experience then. The disenchantment is the finer degree of equanimity that is very close to the experience of Nibbana. Now, a lot of people have this idea that attaining Nibbana is going to take lifetimes. There's a lot of monks that'll tell everybody, oh, it's going to take you at least 1,000 lifetimes to attain Nibbana, so why even work towards it? I give 10-day retreats. I don't give longer retreats because they're not needed most of the time. And the first retreat I gave in Indonesia, there was 34, it might have been 36, I don't remember how many people it was, but there was 29 experiences of Nibbana in a 10-day retreat. Is it possible in this lifetime? Absolutely. Anyone that experiences even the first jhana can experience Nibbana. Now, what does Nibbana mean? It means getting rid of the heat. You don't have any more doubt as to what the path is about. You know this is the right path. You know that practicing rites and rituals don't lead to Nibbana. Now, a lot of people in Indonesia and Malaysia, both, they've been practicing chanting since they were little tiny kids. And even up to now, they keep chanting every day. And they come for a retreat, I tell them, can't chant during the retreat. And they get upset by that. Yeah, but I want to chant. I feel peaceful when I chant. You can do it when you get off retreat. Right now is the time to work on developing mind. But understand that just doing the chanting is a rite and ritual, and that's not going to lead to Nibbana. But if you like doing it, it's your choice. I'm not the dictator here. All I do is elucidate what the Buddha said. You can do whatever you want when you get off retreat. But if you follow the directions that I'm giving you right now, you will be successful. To what degree is up to you, up to your mind. I don't know. I'm not a fortune teller. Can't tell you for sure whether you're going to experience this or that. It depends on you and how well you follow the directions. If you smile a lot, you're going to be reasonably successful with your meditation. And I mean smile with your mind. If you have a critical thought, something happens and you don't like it, if your mindfulness is not sharp, you're going to take it personally and get carried away with it. If your mindfulness is sharp, you'll see that tightness in your mind start to happen and relax and let it be. And when you do that enough, your mind becomes pure enough, then you're going to experience Nibbana. It really does work this way. Another thing that's going to happen for you is there's going to be a change in your perspective. You're going to see more and more clearly how things really work, and you're not going to be taking them as personally. So you're going to be having more balance in your mind all the time. Colors become brighter and clearer, and everything that you see and you think about becomes more clear. So this is a really important aspect of the meditation. be willing to change. That's what this meditation is all about. Changing. Letting go of your old bummer ways of doing things and causing yourself pain, and developing a more fun, happy way of doing things. It's truly remarkable as a teacher to be able to sit down and see people change in a 10-day period from super grumpy to smiling all the time. Now, that's the people that are following the directions precisely, exactly. And you get instruction every day at the interviews. So it's pretty easy. This is the simplest path that I know of, where people are successful. And it really does work. When I was in Malaysia, they've been practicing Mahasi Vipassana for 40 or 50 years. And they're convinced that's the only way. And I went to the temple that I started up when I first became a monk. And now they have 1,500 to 2,000 children that come for Sunday school every week. They're really active. They've been doing Mahasi-style meditation. And one of the things that happens with that kind of meditation is that mind has a tendency to be very critical. And there's a lot of suffering. They take pride in their suffering. Oh, you have to have pain in your meditation or else you're not doing it right. Well, I did that for 20 years. I had 20 years of suffering along with it. But when I went and talked to them about what craving was, they didn't know what craving was. They didn't know how to recognize it. And these are people that have been practicing for their whole life. And they're very much attached to that way of acting, of being critical, being hard-minded, saying things that are very upsetting to other people because I'm right and they're wrong. They're not willing to change. They're not willing to soften their mind. Even the loving kindness they do hardens their mind because it's a one-pointed type of concentration. So it's kind of an interesting situation to see so many people that think they're following the Buddha's path. But when I start reading the suttas to them, it's brand new knowledge. Where'd you hear that before? Well, you just saw me read it. This is what it means. So there's a lot of people out that are doing many different kinds of meditation that are bummer meditations. They're suffering a lot. I had a student that went to a retreat, got kicked out of the retreat because they were smiling. You're not supposed to be happy. This is serious stuff. If you have restlessness, you're trying too hard. You're pushing. And what you have to learn to do is back off. You don't have to control anything. Just six are and let it be there by itself. Don't keep your attention on it. So the more you can do that, the more you can smile, the more you have fun, the less you talk, you will be successful with your meditation. I'm not saying everybody here is going to attain Nibbana, because I don't know. But I am saying you're going to go through some changes, and you're going to like the changes that you go through. You're going to see for yourself how you cause your pain. And you can decide, yeah, I'll let it go. I'm not going to keep holding on to this idea. Doesn't necessarily have anything to do with reality. It doesn't have anything to do with the truth. It's just, I like it this way, and I'm going to demand that it stays that way. Well, if you're going to do that, you're not going to be successful. You have to be willing to change. And the more you use the six R's, the more you develop wholesomeness in your mind. Takes practice. Not always easy, but it's simple. One of the biggest problems that I have in Asia is they've been listening to a lot of Mahayana, a lot of Theravada that's very complicated. And I come along and give them these instructions and they say, this is too simple. It's got to be harder than this. Well, you want to make it harder? Okay, don't do it. It's up to you. I don't have anything to do outside of give you information that works. That's all I do. And I get to see you change and start to have more fun and start to have a lighter mind. And you start losing wrinkles, and you start developing a glow around your face. I get to see all of that. And that's my payment. And it's great fun for me. So please follow the directions as closely as you can. We'll talk about it every day. And I'm not going to be interested in stories when I talk to you in the interview. I'm going to ask you specific questions I want the answers to. Sometimes I have to ask the same question over and over again before I get an answer, but that's okay. But I don't need to know your whole story. There's certain things that I'm looking for to see how you're doing it, see how your understanding is arising, and I will give you comments. It's not going to take very long. Okay, each interview is going to be lasting between 5 and 10 minutes. That's about it. Because I need to know how long you're staying on your object of meditation, what's happening during the meditation, are you able to stay with your object of meditation when you're when you're walking, when you're eating, when you're taking a shower, are you staying with your object of meditation? And the object of meditation is going to change from time to time. And I'll let you know about that too. Okay. smiling is key. And I understand that a lot of people that are teaching meditation are suggesting smiling more. And that's just great. And I've been criticized heavily because the Buddha didn't teach you to smile. No, he just said we're the happy ones. The more you smile, the better your mindfulness becomes. The better your mindfulness becomes, the better your progress becomes. It's that simple. It's not a complicated system. When the Buddha was going around, he was spending a lot of time with farmers and villagers that were uneducated. He's not going to be a successful meditation teacher if he comes up with some complicated thing that you have to do for meditation. They wouldn't have time and they wouldn't be interested in it. It had to work fast. It had to work well. That's why the Buddha was successful. He came up with this system. It's not my system. He came up with a system that worked. And it's surprising how few people actually follow that. They do a lot of different kinds of meditation. And you have some very popular meditation teachers that are going around, and because of the one-pointed concentration, it can be dangerous. People can put in wrong concentration, and they actually wind up going to a mental institute because of that meditation, of their trying to control, trying to do it the way they say it needs to be done. But this meditation is not any problem because of the relaxed step, because of the smiling, because of not pushing to make something happen the way you think it should happen. By relaxing and allowing, that's what the meditation is for. Do you have any questions? Seems like it's a morgue in here. You know, one of the suttas that the Buddha gave, he was talking about karma and how it works. And he said that people that don't ask questions when they actually have questions, in their rebirth, they're going to be dumb. And people that ask questions are going to be very intelligent. When I was with my teachers, I was continually asking questions because I'm just a dumb American. I don't know. I gotta find out. And then I can judge whether it's right or not. But I did that for years. And I was told by Usilananda that I ask so many questions that if I don't attain Nibbana in this lifetime, when I come back, I'm going to be the smartest person in the world. Because I wanted to know every different aspect about what the meditation is and about what Buddhism is. So if you don't understand something that I'm saying, even during the talk, raise your hand. I will answer you as best I can. I can't guarantee that I'm going to give you exactly the right answers. as I am human too. But I'll give you the best I can give. And I want you to give me the best you can give. Okay? So let's share some merit.
There was a question down here.
Oh, she's too far to the side. I couldn't see you. Yes?
When I sit, I like to sit on the floor, and then my body complains a little bit, but if I rock a little bit...
No.
No rocking?
Don't move.
Don't move at all. So just notice the sensation in the body and then let it go.
You know, I was raised with the Burmese tradition that everybody sits on the floor, not even on a chair. Uh-huh. And you know how much pain that brought up for years? And then I developed blood clots in my legs. So I started having to sit in a chair, and I found I could sit much longer without any pain arising. And that's not a distract, that's letting go of a distraction. So consider changing your posture. I'm not saying you have to sit in a chair, but change your posture, change the pillows, the heights of the pillows. Putting a pillow underneath your legs so pain doesn't come up.
So when I have pain during my sitting, should I get
6R. No, 6R.
6R. And not move.
Don't move. You can move as much as this moves. Okay?
So when I... 6R is not working anymore.
Well, let's ask you a question. What does it mean that it doesn't work anymore? Because it always works. It's not to control anything. It's just to observe. So your observation can still be there. But the pain can be so intense that you feel like you have to get up. Sit as long as you're comfortable.
So when I release and then smile.
Release, relax, smile, return. Right. And it's doing these things, not saying them.
So I release and I feel it and I release and I smile and it just, do I...
You didn't hear what I said. You release, you relax. If you don't have that relaxed step in there, you're not going to be successful with the meditation. That is the key. That is how you recognize craving and how you let go of craving.
Even though it's there, relax. It takes time for the body to let go of that sensation.
No. We're working with mind.
Not body.
Meditation pain. What is a meditation pain?
A contraction in the mind.
Why do you have meditation pain?
Because I have preference about the sensation.
Because in the past you broke precepts. Pleasant feeling, painful feeling. Same coin, different sides. Treat them in the same way. But painful feeling is hard to put up with. As you sit with that, allow that feeling to be there without any resistance and making a big deal out of it in your mind. And I understand all of that. Believe me, I had 20 years of it. As you allow it to be, no matter how painful it is, and you stay on your object of meditation, that will disappear eventually. Every time your attention gets pulled to that sensation, you have to six-R and come back. But it's not a control mechanism. The six R's are not for control. The six R's are just so you can observe and allow it to be by itself. So you can let go of the "I don't like it" mind. Okay? And sit in a way that's comfortable for as long as you can. See, at first you're going to sit for half an hour, 45 minutes, an hour. And then when your sitting is good, you sit longer. Now, there was a Chinese lady. It was kind of funny that it happened the way it did. She'd come in after 3 or 4 days of their retreat. "How long did you sit?" 50 minutes. "Why don't you sit longer?" "Okay, I'll try." Come in the next day. "How long did you sit?" 45 minutes. "I don't have anything to say to you. Go away. If you're not going to follow the directions, go away." So the next day she came in for the interview. I said, "How long did you sit?" She said, "5 hours." "Oh, that means you went through that little tiny pain that was bothering you, huh?" "Yeah." And I felt this relief, and I had my mind, everything just stopped for a moment. And I had this really extreme joy, and I feel so happy right now. "Oh, you just became a sotapanna." "Really?" "Yeah." By the end of the retreat, she'd had that experience quite a few times and became an anagami. Now, in 10 days, that's pretty amazing. Especially when the first 3 or 4 days she was doing nonsense, not following the directions. But when I wouldn't talk to her, and I said, "If you're not going to do it, leave. Go away." Then she knew I was serious. So she got serious. Not serious in a pushing hard way, but just deciding, "Yes, I'm going to do it." And she had a lot of fun. After the retreat, she was walking around. She says, "I don't have any thoughts. There's no distractions in my mind. I only feel loving kindness. I have very good collectedness of mind. This is pretty amazing. No fear. No anxiety. No dislike. No." "Oh, your mind's pretty pure then. Good." So follow the directions, and part of my directions is going to try to encourage you to sit longer, to sit through some of these meditation pains, to find out that it's only because of past action. You have this pain now. What you do with what arises in the present moment dictates what happens in the future. If you fight the present moment, you dislike the present moment, you want the present moment to be different, then look for bummers. Look for the dukkha. But when you accept it, that dissatisfaction disappears, and your mind will go much deeper into your object of meditation. And you'll start to understand more and more clearly how these things actually work. Everything about Buddhism is about understanding how this process actually occurs. Okay. Any other question? Let's share some merit then. May suffering ones be suffering free, and the fear-struck fearless be. May the grieving shed all grief, and may all beings find relief. May all beings share this merit that we have thus acquired for the acquisition of all kinds of happiness. May beings inhabiting space and earth, devas and nagas of mighty power, share this merit of ours. May they long protect the Buddha's dispensation. Sadhu.